Hello everybody, Friday night saw Sale produce another excellent display away from the AJ Bell and navigate some tricky conditions to clinically put away Gloucester 23-17 at King's Home. The win keeps Sale in second place in the Premiership for another week and saw them gain ground on league leaders Exeter due to the Chiefs' loss to Quins. However, just as things appear to be aligning perfectly for Sale, the club made the surprise announcement this morning that England international Chris Ashton has left the club with immediate effect. My name is Lewis, welcome back inside the Shark Tank, and joining me to discuss a typically manic week from a Sale perspective are my co-hosts Alex and James. Alex, how are you?
I'm good, mate. Well, I was until about 9:30 this morning anyway. How are you?
Exactly the same. Great win on Friday, buzzing for the rest of the weekend, and then sort of brought back down to earth with a small bump on Monday morning, even more so than usual. James, how are you?
I'm a bit confused, mate, to be honest, with the Ashton news. So looking forward to getting into discussing that.
Yeah, I think that'll be a good one. And I think that's kind of, it's great that it's happened just before one of our podcasts for a change. Usually we get these news directly after we finish recording. So that plus Redpath means we're on a two-week streak for getting some good juicy news to get our teeth into on that week's podcast. But obviously it has kind of put a bit of a cloud over things at the moment. And we will come on to it in a little bit. And it will dominate discussion, I think, today. But I think the key thing, obviously, first and foremost, is to focus on the win on Friday night. And what a fantastic win it was. And what a shame that the Ashton news seems to have overshadowed it slightly. Because we said going into the game, a big win for Sale away from home would really help us sort of cement our places as genuine top four contenders, you know, once again. And that's exactly what we got. And Alex, you'll have been watching on Friday night, I'm sure. You know, what was your immediate takeaway from Sale producing another great win away from home to pick up another key 4 points?
Just a brilliant away battling performance, wasn't it? I was so impressed with how we played and the accuracy we played with. In really tough conditions against a decent Gloucester side away from home on a Friday night. How few mistakes we made and how disciplined we were. And, we won that game through just pure sort of belligerence and not making mistakes and relying on our defence. Because you look at our tries and two of them come from Gloucester mistakes and the other one is just a rolling ball. So it's a real sort of forward show of dominance over them, and I think a massive credit to a few players in that pack for how they coped in those conditions. But then just as a team performance, it was, you know, one of the best away performances I think I've seen for a long time, because it needed some proper mental determination and grit, and it's just a massive result away from home to back up a little run of form that we're starting to put together. I was so impressed. And I genuinely think that the scoreline flattered Gloucester, because I think both of their tries were, the second was obviously massively fortuitous. And the first came from what I thought was quite a harsh yellow card, which ended up meaning we were down to 14. So the way we fought through that and, you know, the performance we put in, I thought was absolutely outstanding. I just can't speak highly enough of it, because to do that away from home and get the result is just absolutely massive. And it could have been more, couldn't it, if Simon Hammersley could find Marlon Yale on the touchline. But yeah, I'm full of nothing but praise for that performance for me. What about you?
Well, I think you touched upon a really good point, that Sale are in a quite a good little vein of form now. And it's come at a time where nobody else in the league really is producing results with any consistency. We look at the last four games that Sale played in the league. They picked up three wins out of the four. They've picked up a bonus point against Leicester. The only sort of blemish on that record is that Saracens game, away from home. But they beat Exeter, they beat Leicester, they beat Gloucester. And I think the most encouraging thing is not only are we racking up, 12, 13, 14 points in that span, we're also beating teams in a very different way. You know, Exeter, we played the sort of perfect counter-strike away from home game where we let them have the ball in possession and we just took our opportunities, and then we did really well to hold them off in the second half. Leicester, obviously, we came into the game as heavy favourites and we delivered on that favourites tag by kind of bullying them around the park and letting our sort of dominance up front and in the backs sort of come to fruition, in a bit of a slow burner game, but it was a really sort of patient performance. And then again, this Gloucester game, what's most impressive is just how we kind of held them off at arm's length for the entire game. I think the conditions obviously played a big part in it. And, you know, obviously we seem to navigate those a little bit better than Gloucester. But I think the key thing was, even when Gloucester had their purple patch in the second half and they scored two tries in quick succession and looked like they were about to make a comeback, Sale kept their composure really well and pounced upon an error from Gloucester as they had to kind of force the play. And it, you know, pushed us back out to, you know, a 5-6 point lead again for not the first time in the game. And that was kind of the story. We were sort of better all over the park. We built a lead, we consolidated it, and then every time Gloucester came close to challenging it, we kind of pushed it back out again. And we've shown in the last couple of weeks we're able to adapt our game plan and play in difficult conditions and play against teams with different game plans. And that's the reason why we're sitting very pretty now up in second and actually gaining ground on the Chiefs in first. James, what was your sort of takeaway from Sale's win on Friday night?
Well, the big thing is that we've put back-to-back wins together, and we said that that was the blemish on this season, really, that we'd shown that we've got a really high bar of potential to perform, and on our day we're a match and possibly better than most of the teams in the Premiership. But to go down to Gloucester, you know, and pick up a win, we seem to quite like it down there. I don't know why. I mean, it's a bloody tough place to go and play rugby. So getting that back-to-back win is really, really important, because now it's given the team, we've got a real chance here of nailing a home semi-final. And hopefully, you know, a few guys in that squad are seeing this as an opportunity that they need to seize. Irish coming up next week, real opportunity to get a bit of a bandwagon going. In terms of the way we played, I thought there's clearly a lot of that kind of Saracens and Exeter template coming into our game now. You know, lots of pressure put on from defence, forcing errors, which against a team where Gloucester were mentally is really, really important. Gloucester, as we said in the preview last week, have been on a run of a few losses, and they played like that. You know, they really played like a team shorn of confidence, and no more so than Danny Cipriani at 10, who I thought had a poor game. And I don't think his head is quite in the right place, unfortunately, for playing professional rugby at the moment. Obviously, you know, I know he's going through a bit of a tough time and he's got a lot on his plate, and as an Excel player, there's no one as big a fan as we are of Danny Cipriani. And certainly last year, he was the reason why Gloucester came third. But they're not firing at the moment. You know, we managed to stop all of their big ball carriers, despite some returning internationals right on the gain line. I thought our management of the game at 9 and 10 was superb, which I suppose, Lewis, you know, I know you've got a view on how Cliff and Rob Dupree are building a relationship and managing the game.
Well, absolutely. I think what's kind of been lost in the last couple of weeks is just not only how well Will Cliff is playing, but how Rob Dupree has come to the fore. Because to start the season, he was sort of dovetailing with McGinty. Both of them sort of look good in fits and spurts. Obviously, McGinty's since gone down with an injury that will rule him out for most of the season. And that's kind of given Dupree a bit of breathing room in that competition. It doesn't look like that competition was particularly suiting either of them to start the year. And now that Dupree has settled in, I think he's actually having arguably the best 5-game span of any Sale player at the moment. We don't need him to be a world beater. We don't, you know, we have the likes of De Klerk and Van Rensburg who can break a game open at a moment's notice. What we really need from Dupree is someone who can move the chains, who can, you know, play well in tough conditions and obviously kick his goals. And the last couple of weeks, that's exactly what he's given us. And we knew he could play flat. We knew he could play a bit at 12, as we saw earlier in the season. We knew he could he could be a bit of a flat track bully and play on hard grounds. Where the jury was still out on Dupree was how was he going to deal with these winter games? And he's actually come through it looking very much like a number 10 for a top four caliber team. So I thought he was absolutely fantastic against Gloucester. Knowing when to pass, knowing when to put the kicks in behind, knowing when to just bomb one up high and let the conditions sort of wreak havoc with it. We got a little bit lucky for the Luke James try. It's obviously a little bit of just a grubber kick that takes an awkward deflection and goes up into the air. But it's the fact that we've got a 10 who's feeling confident, who's got the structure around him to make those plays. And you do make your own luck. And I think you mentioned Saracens and Exeter there, James. And that's kind of the real reason why we won this game. We had a pack. We built a pack that can bully other teams. And in Cliff, at the moment, we have a scrum half who's one of the best box kickers and strategic kickers in the Premiership, especially on current form. And so that's kind of how we're navigating territory and navigating possession. But I think it's the extra element that someone like Dupria brings in the form that he's got at the moment, is that being able to bully teams up front is only good for X amount of points a game. It's when the ball comes out the back of a maul that you need to get your decision makers on it quickly. And Dupria is showing that he can excel with that sort of pressure and that sort of responsibility. So Cliff should absolutely get the merits. The forward pack should absolutely get the merits. But it's having someone like Dupria who can bring our more dangerous attacking players into the game that I think also needs to be recognised. And I think, you know, short of an absolute rocket pass from Simon Hammersley, we would have seen yet another instance where Dupria is the one taking the ball to the line, letting the players outside him drift off him, and then he's the one feeding them through for easy tries. So I was absolutely full of praise for Dupria. I thought he was absolutely fantastic on Friday, and he really is starting to come into his own. James, Alex, before we go to three-word reviews, I'll let either of you answer this one. Is there anyone else that you think deserves special mention? Because I've had a look through the three-word reviews, and a lot of them focus on the team rather than individuals.
I think Jono Ross, I think what he does for the team just every week goes so under the radar, but it's games like this where he is absolutely, you know, worth his weight in gold. Just the hard carrying, the sort of grittiness to that performance. Completely agree on Will Cliff and Rob Dupria. I thought Luke James had a really good game. I thought Simon Hammersley had a really good game. Despite that pass, I think the solidity he gives us at the back, you know, in a game where what you have with Hammersley at 15 is a fullback that makes teams not really want to use that weapon of the up and under, because he is so solid under the high ball and actually quite elusive. And he just keeps the chain moving, stays on his feet for long enough to get forwards around him when he takes the ball in. And, you know, you see us losing so much less ball off the kicks in behind that teams don't actually want to kick in behind anymore, because, you know, it's almost, he's not that sort of Tolu Sivianu where if you kick to him, you're thinking, oh God, here we go, we could go anywhere. But he's just a player that if you kick to him, you're thinking, well, he's going to take this, and then he's going to stay on his feet and wait till he's got people around him and we're giving the ball away. So I think Hammersley, for me, despite that pass, Luke James, I just thought, had a really solid game again at 12 and sort of almost justifies Cameron Redpath going with every performance he puts in. Again, you know, he's still only young. We forget how young he is. But the work rate and the tackling is just fantastic. And, yeah, Jono Ross is always, for me, absolutely outstanding. James, anyone else for you? Or have I run through pretty much all the good performance there?
No, I'd like to add in Kuni Ustase, and I thought, well, for a start, he put in a lengthy shift. There was a late change, wasn't there? Ross Harrison failed a fitness test, so Ustase seemed to play the most of the game. I was surprised by that. I thought, you know, Mrozov, we saw some really strong performances earlier on in the season. It'd be an opportunity for him to come on and really show his power. But I thought Ustase's getting better all the time at loose head. I think it was clear at the beginning of the season it had been a long time since he'd played in that position. And we saw him a bit at three, and we wondered whether that would be where we'd see the most of him, actually. But no, I think he's really grown as a loose head. And then the Duprias, you know, it's hard to imagine this team without them, because they've really adapted their game for wet weather conditions. I wasn't sure if they could do it, to be honest. The way that they hold on to the ball now, we don't see quite as much speculative passing, and it's just hold on to the ball and try and tackle me if you can, which is difficult to do. And maybe when the grounds get a bit firmer and the weather a bit drier, we'll start seeing those offloads again. But they've shown to be adaptable, and they're just huge signings for us. Yeah, the worst thing that could happen for us is if they start getting picked up by South Africa again, because that would leave a big hole. And then just to agree with you on Luke James, I thought he's brilliant. And what he's added some pace. So I think his stint at 15 last year has made him work on two things. First is top-end pace. I think it showed a little bit with the lucky fortuitous try. You know, he's the fastest off the mark, including McGuigan, and was first to the ball. But it's really helping him, I think, accelerate through contact and get over the gain line. He's never going to be a beast quite like Van Rensburg, but he's got quite a big frame. he'll fill out naturally as time goes on, and he's a difficult person to tackle. But the other thing that he's added, which what Van Rensburg doesn't have, is a bit of footwork. He always adds just a little bit of footwork just before the contact. And that even means that sometimes he slows himself down after catching the ball, shows a little bit of footwork, and then tries to accelerate and show a bit of power into the contact. So he's always picking the gap, the weak shoulder. So it isn't just body on body, meat on meat. You know, he's actually really playing so intelligently. And that's where I think, you know, we don't give him the credit he deserves on that. You know, his skill set is actually really quite advanced now. And I'm really excited to see him continue to grow.
Love that. It's a new one every week. James Williams' thighs, Sam James's pins, and now this week it's Luke James's feet. You've really got a theme going on there, James.
Yeah, I mean, I'm into some weird shit, right? But you know that you've got to give credit where it's due, and in all of those things, you've just got to put up your hands and say, "Fair dues, lads."
Fair dues, James Williams, and your spectacular thighs.
Yeah, I think the point on Luke James, though, is a very good one. Like, what we're seeing in real time in front of our eyes is this evolution of a young player, because it seems like every three games he's added something new to his skill set. Last season, it was sort of the big boot in terms of tactical kicking. You know, this year it's been some of the sort of hard carrying. Now it's kind of the footwork. A couple of weeks ago, it was the speed. And you can't help but think, you know, rightly or wrongly, that there's a very clear reason why someone like Cam Redpath was finding his first team opportunities frozen out a little bit. And it's because Luke James has adapted to the modern Premiership and the role that Selle need them to play at the moment a little bit quicker. And I still think probably long term, I think Luke James has a lower ceiling. Cam Redpath, if it all comes together, could be an England international, which I don't actually see for Luke James, particularly at this stage of his career. But what we're seeing now is someone who's at 20 years old, to the same age as Redpath, is turned into a really dependable and integral part of Selle's first team squad. And that's kind of what we need at the moment, rather than someone like Redpath, who I think in 2 or 3 years' time will be looked at as one of the young stars in the England squad. But he's not quite there yet. And at the moment, Selle are in a position, they're in the top four, they're challenging for a title, that we need solid, dependable first team players. And, you know, maybe that's why Luke James is, you know, already played 50 games for Selle, and Cam Redpath was stuck on 20 before he left. So, you know, really important there, James. Yeah, just to highlight that sort of evolution in Luke James's game that's turned him into one of our most consistent performers this year. So let's do some three-word reviews. Rob Manley, Ross is solid, solid in capital letters to emphasise the point. Jamie, supreme team effort. Jamie McAndrew, media paying attention. That's a very good point. The BT Sport punditry were very complimentary of Selle for the rest of the weekend after Friday night. Matt Sansbury, played weather well. Nick Frost, absolutely superb display. Mark Travers, solid game, lads. Ken Naylor, dare to dream. And David Davis, brilliant away win. So one of the things that I'm picking up there is that there weren't a lot of individuals highlighted per se. It does kind of feel like it was a total sum effort, everybody playing a role, a really good team effort. And obviously we've spoken about that. But James, one player that I wanted to sort of briefly highlight, in addition to the ones from before, is Marlon Yard, who obviously very gratefully scooped up a mistake from Cipriani and ran away into the corner in the second half. So basically put the game to bed, get another try on the board for Selle, and obviously pick up his fourth try in two games. Obviously, we'll come on to Chris Ashton in a bit, but how important do you think it is for Yard's sort of return to first-team action that this little run of form now where he's scoring tries and sort of looking back to his best is, you know, for Marlon's sort of short-term and long-term future with Selle?
It's absolutely essential, especially in light of the Chris Ashton news, because with Chris Ashton, you lose somebody who just scores tries, you know, and he doesn't have to be particularly good form or, you know, coming back from injury, he'll still find a way to the try line. So it's really important to us that we have this experience of a England international. Let's not forget, he's got a number of caps for England, and he brings with that the knowledge and the experience, which is really, really important as we try and win the Premiership title, which I think we've got to think now. And, you know, rugby is a confidence sport at team and individual level. I think we've got quite a lot of confidence type players, people like AJ McGinty. I think Rob Dupree is definitely one of those. You know, seeing him bend in the kick this week, I mean, he's like he was just, you know, the ball was on the end of a shoestring for him, wasn't it? And then you know, other times during the season, he's, you know, you wouldn't back him in front of the posts. And that just goes to show it's not just about technique, it's about the mental side of the game. And for Marlon Yard, you know, he's a powerful man and he's quick. And, you know, I think when you've had a knee injury like he has, it's, you know, when you're a winger and you're reliant on your pace, but also reliant on, you know, changing direction. And when you're worried about your knee, I think that's really important, especially defensively as well. Let's not underestimate, it's not just about going forward. When you're thinking about changing direction and accelerating, you know, that's even more important sometimes in defence, because if you're retreating and the other person's running onto the ball, then you've got to change direction really, really quickly and then get right in the right place to make the tackle. And I wonder whether some of his poor defence earlier in the season, he was caught out of position rushing forward, he was trying to overcompensate and try and shut down the outside pass. Equally, he was going in a bit high sometimes as well. And I wonder whether that's just, you know, a little bit to do mentally. So it's enormous for Sale. It's enormous for him. I don't know what his contract situation is, but I imagine with Chris Ashton leaving, we'll be trying pretty hard to nail him down for another couple of years.
I think that's a good point about his defence as well, especially in the immediate aftermath of the return from that injury. Because I do think, you know, you've got me on record 5-6 weeks ago now, complimenting Yard's defence and saying, actually, when he first came back, it was pretty poor. And in the games that he played since, you could really see that defensive aspect of his game, you know, coming back to him. He's never been known as a really stout defensive player. But I thought a couple of games, I think La Rochelle, either away or home, was one of them where he didn't make much of an impact with the ball in hand because he didn't really get the opportunity to do so. But defensively, in his line reads, in his positioning, he was pretty solid. And what we're kind of seeing now is we're seeing the strong positional play. We're seeing the adequate defence, but we're also starting to see him get those opportunities to do what he does best, and that's obviously attack the line and score tries. And there's no coincidence that that's come at a time where our pack is dominating oppositions and Rob Dupree is playing with confidence and attacking the line to open up opportunities for his wingers. But it is obviously just great to see, you know, for someone like Marlon, who's had to endure a lot of both physical and mental anguish over the last sort of couple of years, and really good to see him get back on the horse, so to speak, and obviously, you know, get on the score sheet and help the team win. And obviously, it's you know, especially as a Sale fan, but also just as a rugby fan, it's obviously great to see. Alex, I think, you know, we've spoken about how great a team performance it was. There's probably not much else to say from an on-field perspective, or at least an eye test perspective. If there's anything else that you want to mention, maybe now's the time to do it. And then if not, maybe we can move on to some stats.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was just such a solid performance, and I think the stats are going to back that up. So I'll head straight into them. Sort of, you know, you can look at this from an individual level, and I will pull out some individual stats. But I think the key for me is that our defence was just outstanding. 94% tackle success rate across the team. So 122 tackles made, 8 missed. Compared to Gloucester, they defended pretty well. They're up at 89%, but it's just that 5% difference that I think is probably, you know, told in the 6-point difference on the scoreboard. They were 125 tackles made with 16 miss. You know, the sort of keys on a night like Friday, the set piece. So our line out 18 out of 21. So again, a pretty good return, plus one steal from Bryn Evans, obviously all thrown by Rob Webber, and then our scrums 100% on our own feed. So again, a good return there. Discipline was really, really good this week. Only 8 penalties conceded, which away from home is massive. Gloucester conceded 14 on the night. So I think, you know, they're probably the key ones, the nuts and bolts of the game, the set pieces, the discipline, the defence. But then coming into sort of more individual stats and the attacking, we beat 16 defenders to Gloucester's 8 and threw 6 offloads to their 5. So you can just sort of see that it was one of those games, obviously, where you're not throwing any offloads. So that's slightly less relevant, but certainly the defenders beaten. I think we were just carrying really hard and carrying really well. So top carries, Dan Dupria top in the game with 15. You've then got Ben Morgan and Tom Marshall. Marshall obviously fullback, so I think that's a lot of us kicking to him. But then Jono Ross with 12 as well. Meter makers, Ruan Ackerman was top from Gloucester, but Marlon Yard, the top sale meter maker with 31, which just sort of emphasises, you know, given we had Dan Dupree making 15 carries, Jono Ross making 12, a few other players up there as well, Jean-Luc making 9 carries, Rob Webber making 8. You know, the meters weren't great, but it was just the hard yards and the hard graft. And, you know, when you look at the meters overall in the game, we made a total of 181 compared to Gloucester's 167 off about the same carries. So it was like a really slow game. You know, most of the time our meters per carry are like 2.5-3 meters a carry. On Friday it was 1.7, so it's really sort of grudge and a hard fought win. But you know, when we do get the ball, as I said, Dan Dupree had 15 carries. He made 19 metres off them, which on the night is a pretty good return. The halfbacks, Will Cliff, 23 metres off 9 carries. Rob Dupree, 21 metres off 7 carries. Mentioned Yard. And then Byron McGuigan, 20 metres off 5 carries. So, and a shout out to Rob Webber, 14 metres off 8 carries, because I won't be able to shout him out next season, of course. So, you know, in attack, I think you could see that we were, you know, it's just the lack of mistakes, I think, that helped us. So, you know, we're not making massive meters, but we are carrying accurately and we're not turning the ball over as much as, you know, as much as we'd historically would. And I think you can see that because usually about half of our turnovers are drop balls. And it was only 5 out of 13 on Friday. So that accuracy, I think, was massive. Going into defence, just an epic performance, really. When you look at the starting pack, who were, of course, pretty much the pack that played the whole game, they made 98 tackles between them with only 3 missed, one each, Bruce Hazen, Ben Curry and Dan Dupree missed. But then some of the stats, East Hazen 10 tackles, Rob Webber 17 with none missed, Jono Ross 18 with none missed, Dan Dupree 14 with only one missed, as I mentioned. And everyone else is 10s, basically. And then in the backs, it's sort of 5 and 6 thrown across those. But just a huge performance, really, from the team. And to do it on a night like that, where, you know, you've got a good Gloucester side, to not be missing tackles and not falling off, I think it is huge. And for a pack that all played virtually 80 minutes, is a massive result. So I think that's sort of the story of the game, isn't it? You know, our defence was just, you know, Gloucester almost never looked like getting through it. And the way they got through it, as I said, was sort of, you know, you get the drive over, but that comes when we're down to 14 men off a yellow card that I thought was a bit harsh, given that we'd, you know, been more than over their line and they'd taken it down multiple times prior to that. And then the first sort of time it happens to us, Wayne Barnes gives Wilcroft trying a yellow card. As I say, we only conceded 8 penalties in the game compared to Gloucester's 14, but ended up with a yellow card. It's a bit of an odd one. And then their second try was obviously just incredibly fortuitous. So I think the story of the game really is that defence underpinning everything else, and then the accuracy, as I say, you know, a hard game to play, hard metres to be made, but we just did everything really, really well, and a massive, massive performance from the pack, as we sort of, as you would expect for an away win at Gloucester, I think. So yeah, that wraps it up nicely. Thanks to Ben and Opta, as always.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's a really good way of looking at it. We capitalised on 2 mistakes from Gloucester, one when we were attacking, one when we were defending, and we scored 2 tries. And obviously we got that pushover try as well in as part of that attritional aspect of the game that kind of dominated on Friday, as just been evidenced by the stats. So I think that's everything on Sale Gloucester. Let's now move on to probably the biggest story of the week from a Sale perspective. The news that obviously Chris Ashton has left the club with immediate effect. Let's round table on this really quickly and just sort of give our sort of immediate reactions. I know for me personally, my immediate reaction when I saw the news this morning was a shock and genuine surprise. Ashton has obviously been a key player for Sale when he's been available in the 18 months that he's been at the club. He's someone who's featured quite heavily in the first team this season. And there was no real inclinations that he might have been on the way out, short of the rumour that broke on Sunday that he might be off to Harlequins at some point. So very surprising. And obviously, maybe the timing of it as well, I think, is something that needs to be considered. I think maybe, and this is obviously just hypothesizing here, you know, maybe the timing of the announcement, you know, coming in conjunction with the Saracen salary cap scandal and some of the other news in terms of Ashton's role within that. Obviously, as well, we are now a cap team, and there are elements that suggest that Ashton's salary will have, and having that removed from the team will create quite a large hole, which would actually help us, you know, sign players either for immediate purposes or for ahead of next year as well. So genuine surprise. There is a feeling that maybe there's a sensible timing element to it as well. But obviously, it's a massive news story. I'm interested to hear what you think, James, when you saw the news that broke this morning.
Well, like you, it was a bit of a shock. And my first thing was, we have a chance of winning the Premiership this year. And you really want to be keeping a record try scorer in your squad. And I think especially as the ground start hardening up and there's more line breaks, you know, he'd just be absolutely ideal for that, tracking play, scoring a load of tries, running off the likes of the Dupreez. So for me, there's just absolutely no logic in it. The only thing I can think of is if there's somebody coming in short term to us, you know, where there's going to be an in season signing for us the other way, because I get the clearing space in the salary cap a little bit, but you know, there's only any point in doing that if A, we're over the cap and are terrified about being investigated and penalised, or B, you know, we've got somebody incoming and we need to free up some space. But for me, you know, some people say we're overstocked in the backs, and we possibly are. But, you know, when you've got McGuigan away with Scotland and then you've had the injuries like we have, you know, if that hits again and you're suddenly in the semi-final of the Premiership, you know, and you're running out there with Roebuck and Reid, these are brilliant potentials. But, you know, you wouldn't want to be going into a semi-final with them this year. And even so, you'd probably want Ashton, you know, still being in the squad and teaching these youngsters everything that he knows about the game. He's a real loss. And I think he's also a big character. And I think he probably has been a big character on the training park, and, you know, he likes his pranks, doesn't he, and all that kind of thing. So the only other thing that I can think of is whether there's been a big falling out or something, because he played 2 weeks ago. So what's happened? You know, and then when you read the club announcement, it's not a good one, is it? So there's obviously been a falling out in some way. I don't know whether it's Chris Ashton wanting out and maybe wanting to move back to London, or, I mean, you never know with all the personal reasons that there might be and things, but it's a loss to sale, there's no question. And, you know, if we keep Yard, McGuigan and Solomona fit, then we might be all right. The other thing to flag is Solomona's not really had much opportunity this year, but he hasn't looked in a great place, has he? And he clearly hasn't been that right. So, you know, it's a risk. It's an absolute risk doing this. And I'm a bit concerned, to be perfectly honest, about what it says. You know, if it rocks the boat in the squad a little bit, because it's so abrupt, it's quite a big name, big character. You know, you'd expect it to have a bit of an impact back at Carrington.
No, absolutely. And you look at the two statements that Sale have released about player departures in the last week and a half, and you have the Cameron Redpath one, which is quite a lengthy piece, and then you have the Chris Ashton one, which is very terse, very succinct, and obviously very matter of fact. It does maybe suggest that there is, you know, something larger afoot here in terms of maybe Ashton being unhappy and maybe there's been some sort of falling out or something, you know, that's led to him leaving so abruptly, which I think is probably the best way to describe it. And just on that point as well about the wingers that we're carrying, I think overall we can probably say four first team wingers plus Reid and Roebuck as academy prospects might actually be slightly overkill for wingers, even with McGuigan being away. But that doesn't consider that we only have one specialist fullback in our team. And Ashton is effectively both our fullback cover behind Hammersley. And he's obviously one of the four wingers that can rotate in and out of the squad. And whilst I think you can get away with having, you know, three first team wingers, I think it is a bit of a concern that we have three first team wingers, one of whom might be away with Scotland, you know, for parts of the year. And then you only have one specialist fullback. And you do have your academy prospects coming through. But like you said, James, we're a team that's ostensibly challenging for the top four and the Premiership this year. And I don't know how much we want to be putting our faith in someone like Aaron Reed or Tom Roebuck to play 75, 80 minutes of really meaningful games at the end of the season when they might be physically or mentally ready to. Alex, what was your takeaway from the news this morning?
Just confusion. I'm just so baffled by it because, well, I think James is right. I think something's going on because even if it was Ashton once out, you know, we've got, what are we in now? Start of March, so you've got 3 months until the end of the season. You know, if it's sort of, oh, we need the cap space or whatever, then just wait until the end of the season. I can't see that, you know, this is the first year we've spent up to the cap. Unless we've gone really wrong, then it'd be really difficult to go over it. And I just think something must have gone on because of the way it's been announced. You know, if it was any, you know, as you say, the wording of the statement, the sort of abruptness of it, it came out of absolutely nowhere. You know, even with Cam Redpath, you sort of had an inkling that something was going on. But this was, you know, it's not like he's been talking to other people or anything. It does seem like he's just decided that he doesn't want to be a Sale anymore. And that's kind of the you know, the feeling I'm getting from it. Obviously, none of us know what's going on, but it would be a very, very odd decision for the club to cancel his contract unless something really problematic has gone on. So clearly there's been some sort of breakdown in communication or whatever. Whether, you know, I know he pulled out of the game late last week with a calf strain from training, I think was the reason given. So whether there was something in that we should have seen coming and, you know, just genuinely for me, confusion. And I sort of want to know what's gone on because that's, as we say, that's 2 Mondays where we've had, you know, relatively high profile players, or in this case, one of the highest profile players we have depart. And I think, you know, the sort of, it is strange because this is one of the bits of news where you just have loads of people texting you, like people who I know like rugby but don't like Sale, text you and say, what's going on? Ashton's left. And, you know, it's just so out of the blue and surprising that I can't see that it had any sort of, it feels like a very snap decision. So, yeah, I think it'll be really interesting to see what the story is when it comes out. You know, it's happened now, so for whatever reason it has happened, we just have to move on as a club. From a Sale point of view, I just agree with all the points you made. I think we're losing a player of massive experience going into a position that he's been in before in sort of top four, looking for a Prem title and the final and semi-final, etc. And a lot of our squad haven't been in before. So that experience would have been massive. So a huge loss there. As we say, a loss of a character from the club, a loss of someone who gave the club a real presence in the media. And got us a lot of coverage, I think. You know, he's one of the people who doing interviews and is a good character and well-liked by the national press as well as, you know, the local press. So that meant that we got a lot more coverage than we were probably used to. So, you know, a massive shame from a Sale fan perspective, but just confusion as well. It's just so... I don't know. There's a lot of varying reactions on Twitter. I think from a rugby point of view, a massive shame. From a sort of, you know, off-field point of view, just confusion and shock and what's going on. And I think it'll take some time for a story to come out, but I'm sure eventually we'll find out.
I'm glad you mentioned the off-field aspect because that was going to be my next question for you, Alex. And this is a difficult question, I should say. This kind of feels like the first, this and Redpath especially, feels like the first sort of blip on what has otherwise been an upward trajectory for the Mason and Orange era at Sale since they took over the club. How do you think Sale sort of come back from this in terms of the slightly negative PR or negative connotations that will be associated with the club, given the very abrupt nature of Ashton's departure and obviously such a high-profile player being the one to leave the club as well?
It's difficult, isn't it? I think, you know, it fundamentally, we're second in the league. You know, we're flying high, we're playing good rugby. So I don't think we need to do anything. You know, I think we let the story will sort of play out and I think people will move on fairly quickly, you know, with Six Nations coming up, it'll sort of almost get lost as that goes on. But, you know, I think we've just got to make sure we are fully compliant with the salary cap, which I assume we are anyway. And, you know, there'll be a bit of chat about it, but I'm sure that it will eventually go away. And there's nothing you can really do, is there? You know, you could put out a statement and say this is why it's happened, but probably neither party wants to do that in this. I think we'll see what comes out when it comes out, but we've done all that we can in kind of announcing it. I think it just depends what's going on, doesn't it? But from an off-field point of view, I don't know. James is the PR expert here, so I will defer to him in a minute. But I think we just let our rugby do the talking. We're second in the league. We're playing well. Focus on that. You know, let's not let that tarnish, you know, the best position Sale have been in for probably 15 years.
Yeah, I think it'll become a story if our form starts to drop, won't it? And if we start slipping back down the league, because Quins, you know, they win at the weekend, Quins? I can't remember. But they're starting to sort themselves out, aren't they? And they're starting to move up the table. So, you know, if we start switching positions at any point soon, then it'll become more of a story. But if we keep winning, it'll be less so. But, you know, he's a lad from the Northwest who's very, very experienced, knows how to score tries. I can't imagine we would have let him go or even asked him to go unless something significant had happened. There must have been a falling out between him and Steve Diamond or him and someone else at the club, or a very specific family reason, I imagine, which has led to such drastic action mid-season. So, yeah, who knows? As Alex says, I think it'll come out. There's been no PR spin, though. There's no PR spin on that statement, is there? So it makes you feel that there's maybe some agreement signed or something like that to keep the story under wraps. But it will out. It will out.
We shouldn't speculate, but it is just so fun to do it. And, yeah, like you said, James, there's nothing particularly there's nothing particularly PR or spin-heavy from that statement. And I think it's a good time for Sale to announce that Luke Diaga and Faf de Klerk will be making the long-awaited returns into a Sale jersey this week as well. Like you said, Alex, I think the key thing now is to focus on the rugby. And it's a good test as well for Diamond and the coaching staff to make sure that everyone's head stays on straight and everyone remains focused on the job at hand, which is obviously consolidating our best position in the league for a long time. So really interesting, you know, time for the coaching staff. And last sort of thing on Chris Ashton, James, that I did want to mention. A lot of the immediate takeaways that Alex mentioned in reaction to the news is obviously, yes, it's a loss, but we have Aaron Reed, we have Tom Rowe, but we have these, you know, very exciting wing prospects coming through. What do you think in the short term, especially, Ashton's departure from Sale means for the likes of Reed and Roebuck? And you know, you're our prospects guy. Who do you think is next in line for probably that fourth spot as a winger in the Sale first team?
To start off with, you know, Solomon is back in the match day squad, which is a good thing. You know, he needs to start playing some more rugby, doesn't he, and get his mind into the game. But then in terms of Reed and Roebuck, Reed's, you know, you say he's ahead. He's a couple of years older and has first team experience and has scored tries in the first team. So, and has shown us enough with his pace that he can be dangerous. I mean, in June, he's going to be, you know, in any open space coming off the bench, for example, with some tired players. He could, bloody hell, in the middle of June, he could rip people apart. Having said that, he's coming back again, like a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of our really bright youngsters from a very serious injury. And I don't know what state he's in, to be perfectly honest. We haven't seen much of him. There haven't been enough like Jets games. I don't think he's been turning out for Sale FC. So I don't know. Tom Roebuck, though, is playing. He's playing for England under 20s this year. And from the reports and the highlights that I have seen, he's been scoring tries and playing very well indeed. Two very different types of wingers. Aaron Reed, quite small in stature, quite a low centre of gravity and just raw pace, really. You know, he needs to add more facets to his game, including, you know, sort of sidestepping and learning to change his pace a bit more subtly. But in terms of raw pace, he's out there. Tom Roebuck, nowhere near as quick as Aaron Reed, but a bit of a monster, you know, really quite big. He pirouettes through tackles. He might well end up as a 13 eventually. But I think he will make the transition to senior rugby quite easily because of that size. You know, he'll be a threat with cross field kicks as well. And will come looking for work in the centre. And I think he'll certainly be able to mix with the big boys in senior rugby quite quick. So depending on Aaron Reed's comeback and where he's at with fitness, I think Tom Roebuck, you know, we saw enough of him early on in the season to say, you know, worth a go, especially after the under-20s tournament comes to a close.
Roebuck looked pretty good as well against La Rochelle, like you said, going up against very physically developed senior rugby players. And I do like the idea that he can slot into the centres eventually. But I think obviously with the way Sale play and how we try and use our wingers off first phase ball and obviously have them drift into the midfield, especially as we've seen in the last couple of weeks, Roebuck could be a really strong asset there. He has a bit of touch of Matt Banahan about him that I think would translate very, very well to the modern game, especially as someone who can sort of flip between centre and wing as required by the team. So Tom Roebuck probably isn't going to play for Sale this week, but Chris Ashton definitely won't. And so obviously we've kind of said all there is to say about Chris Ashton, and now our attention needs to focus on the matter at hand, which is the visit of London Irish to the AJ Bell on Friday night. Not on BT for the first time in 2 weeks. It's an 8 p.m. kickoff as a result. I'm here to sort of give you the lowdown on what we can expect from the newly promoted side. It's James.
Cheers. I'm going to whiz through it this week because I think people have probably heard enough from me. But I mean, look, Irish are a different proposition than maybe we thought they would be at the beginning of the season. And they've had a good run in the last month or so in the Premiership. They've won at the Saints. They've won at Quinns. So that's winning twice on the road. And, you know, when they won at Saints were clear in second place. So that was a fantastic win. And then won at home to Gloucester. And we're actually leading after 55 minutes at home to Wasps on Sunday. But then the wheels sort of came off and the scoreline really reflected a bit of a battering in the end. So they are down to eighth in the table. Still a lot higher than most of us would have given them credit for at this stage of the season. And they are only 3 points off the top four. You know, I think they're going to be aiming for that. You know, and they've got a really experienced head at 10, sort of marshalling them around the park. But some of these big signings that they did make at the beginning of the season, it's quite interesting how they've been used. So, you know, Coleman, Phipps, Rona, Maffey, Kepu, they're all settled in the squad, but they're rotating. You know, it's not like a de Klerk situation with us where he kind of plays 78 minutes and gets picked in every game he's fit. You know, you'd expect someone like Kepu and Coleman and Phipps to be treated like that. No, absolutely not. They've had to earn their way into the first team through performances, and they're rotating and using them again, you know, with the rest of the squad that really brought them up into the Premiership, which I think has been a really good feat of management from Declan Kidney. One person who hasn't featured that much this year with a bit of Sale interest is Paddy Jackson. He's mostly been playing at 15 this season, and then, you know, he's been injured. So that's one of the reasons why he's going really well at 10. He's kicking really strongly. I'm just going to flag three players, and all of them are back three players for Irish. Essentially, we're gonna win or lose this game by whether we can get that dominance up front, and you'd expect us to do so. But if Irish can get any sort of foothold and Myler can move the team around the park, then Ollie Hassell-Collins, Ben Loader and Tom Parton are an excellent back three of young English players. Tom Parton, you know, sort of a skill set, a bit like a 10, really. Really nice little footballer. And then I think Ollie Hassell-Collins has got, you know, real wheels, scoring tries for fun this year. And Ben Loader, to me, looks definitely like somebody who's going to play for England sooner rather than later. So, you know, the Irish, they just produce these academy players, don't they, all the time? And all three of these, all playing together, you know, and they managed to get their team into eighth in the Premiership and just 3 points off. So we battered them earlier on this season at the Majeski, absolutely battered them. But they're a different proposition now. Having said that, the form that we're in, you'd expect us to take the chance to get on a real run. So my question is out to you guys, and I'll start with Alex, is, you know, what do you think has changed with Irish this year that, you know, from when we played them at the Rejaski and when we're going to play them now, and how do we need to change the way that we play to beat them?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I think that Irish game was almost an aberration for both teams in that we actually started the season not brilliantly, but completely battered them away from home. And, you know, since that game, they've actually, you know, sort of solidified in the Premiership. And you can see that, you know, they've got some real talent. And I think being able to hold on to that talent is the key for them, because you look at the amount of players, as you rightly say, their academy has produced over the years, and it's just, you know, it's ridiculous the amount of talent coming out of that club. What's changed, I suppose, for us? It's sort of, you know, we've got a much more settled squad now. We were a very new team still in that away game, and I think, you know, I think we shouldn't rely on that as an indication of how Irish are playing, but we also should recognise the fact that we've improved a massive amount since then. The way we play and the sort of structure our game has got has improved so much that I think we have to be confident in what we do and our ability, and how we can beat them is to, again, keep our defence solid and then take our opportunities when we get them, you know. They're a good team, but they're not a great team. And they're probably benefiting from, you know, they're playing really well. And as you say, they've had some big results. But it's been a very odd league this season, hasn't it? And, you know, you've got teams below them playing pretty poorly. You know, no one's playing that well. So we've just got to be confident in our own game. And that's, you know, I think we all agree that we've got more than enough in our locker to beat London Irish if we play how we know we can. The question is whether we can. You know, it's a home game on a Friday night, so you would back us to do that. But they are a good side and not one to be underestimated for me. You know, they are dangerous. And if they get ahead of steam up, you know, you might see those old doubts creeping in again. You know, we've won two on the bounce. It wouldn't be most like us to then go and lose an easy home game to London Irish, wouldn't it?
Well, that would undermine our two in a row win at Gloucester somewhat, wouldn't it? Well, I think you make some, you know, really good points there. You know, the Irish are a good team. They've overperformed, but they're not a great team. And at home, you know, we'd expect to out-muscle them. And we've got some muscle coming back or coming into the side, haven't we, Lewis? So, I mean, what we've heard rumours that, you know, Lude and Faf are ready to return to the first team. How do we integrate them back into the match day squad?
That's a very good question. I think, for me, the key for Sale winning on Friday is obviously to get that dominance up front. It's Friday night in Manchester. Conditions probably won't be great. Kind of have to look at this a little bit like the Leicester game. You just want to win your collisions, you know, establish that dominance in the pack, and then we've got enough firepower in our back line to really match up with Irish, even though that's probably their strength, you know, to get the job done. To be perfectly honest, the big sexy attraction is obviously Lou Diaga, who's in line to make his start. And I think Sale put out a tweet this morning that was very clear that probably both Diaga and De Klerk are going to feature heavily. But we are a very settled squad at the moment, and we have that luxury in a league where not many teams do have that. And I think there's absolutely a correlation with the fact that we're second and very comfortable in second. And a lot of teams, you know, Gloucester, Irish, Wasps, Quint, you know, these teams are yo-yoing a lot. So as much as I'd love to see Diaga start at the, you know, at the beginning of the game, and De Klerk likewise, how can you justify taking Bryn Evans and John Luke out of that starting lineup? And that, you know, I never thought I'd say this, but how can you justify taking Will Cliff out of the starting lineup in favour of Faf de Klerk? Like, my goodness, what a 3 years we've had. I never thought I'd say that. But, you know, so a really settled squad. And we, at the start of the season, we were up and down like a lot of these teams, because we were chopping and changing three or four different players in each week. And we're not probably yet at the point where we can have that systematic rotation like an Exeter or a Saracens. So I'd be very happy to just ride the hot hand here. You know, put Diaga on the bench in place of James Phillips. I think that's, you know, fair to say it's an upgrade. Put De Klerk on there in favour of Gus Waugh. And then we've got some real, you know, star power to come off the bench if, you know, and you hope he doesn't come to this. You know, if we do find ourselves trailing and we need that sort of extra level, well, we can go into that. But if you're looking at how well we've played the last couple of weeks, and even going back to that Exeter game about a month ago, there's absolutely no reason why that team can't beat London Irish at home on a Friday night. And so for me, I do want to see Diaga, and I think this is a great game to bring him in. But, you know, he's just come back from, you know, a really nasty shoulder injury. Let's just give him 15 minutes at the end of the game, unless we need him to play sooner. Same with De Klerk. You know, he's been in and out of the team. He's sort of been injured. We never really got confirmation whether or not he was his most recent absence was prolonged because of injury or if it was due to just rest and rotation. But Cliff's playing well. He's got a great he's got some great chemistry with Rob Dupree at the moment. We're going to need that to move the Irish pack around and bring our sort of, you know, more destructive players into the game in our back line. I think just keep the team as it is, and, you know, we'll you know, we can always fall back on our star players later on if we absolutely need to.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think Louis's been out for so long. I think just being part of the match day prep as well, the warm up, the captain's run, just getting back used to, you know, that game day experience. Faf's going to be absolutely chomping at the bit, and you can imagine the cheer when you sort of bring him on after about 55 minutes. You know, the crowd are going to go absolutely nuts, and it's the kind of entrance that he's going to want to make. So I think for once we'll look to play him off the bench. Same with Lude Diaga. He might even come in for Postlethwaite, because we had 2 second rows on the bench with the option to move Jean-Luc into the back row, didn't we, at the weekend? And yeah. I wonder as well whether we might go for sort of like a bit of a monster substitute situation. You know, I don't know where Acker is, but if he's back, you know, bring him off the bench. And the same also, I'd probably start with Morozov, because I think Ustasian's put in some serious shifts. Don't forget, he's not had a pre-season. He played Curry Cup and got to the final. So I'd like to see Morozov go against Irish. It's almost like, I think, of a bit of a free play a little bit at home. You can always bring Ustasian on. You know, he can last the 80. And Morozov, you know, he's got this power where if it goes right, he could really dismantle the Irish scrum. And then, you know, bring on these big names. I'm presuming Griff John gets released by Wales as well. You know, we've been sort of playing him off the bench during Six Nations game time, because obviously he probably doesn't return to the squad until sort of the Thursday or the Friday as a front rower. So him coming off the bench as well, you know, could you imagine Irish's faces if we're, you know, sort of at the 60-minute mark, if you bring on just like a load of internationals?
Well, absolutely. And that is, that's just how blessed Sale are at the moment in terms of that star power. Because what we cannot forget is the fact that we've just gone to King's Home and beaten Gloucester with no Ashton, no Van Rensburg, no Van der Merwe, no De Klerk, no Beaumont, no Diaga, no AJ, you know, no Tom Curry. You know, and these, you know, those are probably 7 or 8 of our best 10 players. And that shows just how good a squad we have at the moment. And it shows how strong our strength and depth is. And like you said, James, this is a great opportunity to play someone like Morozov, get him some more game time. And, you know, Jake Cooper-Woolley as well is another good example. Because we know throughout the team, we are a good Premiership side, we're consistent, and that should be enough to beat London Irish at home. The only area where I'm particularly worried would maybe be in the centres, just because based on the team they've been putting out the last couple of weeks, Irish have Terence Hepatema and Curtis Rona, you know, who are two very big, bulky carriers, you know, Pacific Islanders, so you know they've got a lot of meat on the bones. That's probably how they're going to attack us. They're going to look at Rob Dupree, who's a decent defensive 10, not amazing, and Luke James as well, who for all the accolades we've been giving him is still only 20 and still has a little bit more to develop. Like that's kind of going to have to be their game plan, especially if we can get that dominance up front. So if Van Rensburg's fit, I think he's probably the only one that I'd be rushing to get back into the team, just because of how much of a difference he makes in terms of a two-way game, get with the ball and without, and it also cuts off an avenue for Irish to attack. But otherwise, you know, we are in a really good position, and it promises to be another really exciting encounter on Friday night. So with that all said, maybe we should do some predictions. Alex?
Yes, I absolutely agree, and not just because I was the only one to predict a Sale win last week, so I want to rub it in. So I am going to say that we are going to have a slightly frustrating game where I sit there and go, why aren't we doing better and putting 50 points on Irish? But I'm still pretty confident we're going to win. And I think it's going to be Sale 24, London Irish 15. I do think Irish are going to give us a good game, and I think they are a good side, but I think we should hopefully just have too much for them. Lewis, what about you?
Much in the same way. I think they're going to be a sterner test than Leicester were, but I still think we should have enough to win, especially at home. I'm going to say Sale 25, Irish 10. I think our defence is one that's really going to come to the fore in this one. James, what about you?
I think we're going to score a few more points. I don't know what the weather's going to be like on Friday night. That's always a bit of an unknown. But I just think we want a bit of a roll, and I think if we can get out to a reasonable start, then we'll score some points. So I'm going to go Sale 29, Irish 13.
All back in the Sale win after we got criticised this week for being a bit overly negative on Twitter.
Did we? Oh, I turned off all the abuse.
Okay. I must have missed that certainly. That's it for another week of the Shouts On podcast. Obviously a lot to get our teeth into this week. Thank you to everyone who's been tweeting us over the weekend. Thank you to everyone who's been giving us their hot takes on the Chris Ashton situation. Thank you to everyone who's been listening as per and sending in the three-word reviews. We should hopefully have something really exciting to announce later on this week, so keep your eyes peeled for that. We're just sorting out the logistics of it. And the only thing left for me this week is just to say, obviously on Friday, look out for former Sale players Matt Rogerson and George Knott, who both have, after leaving Sale, gone down to Irish and really sort of made a home there. And it's great to see, you know, Rogerson and Knott and the like, you know, really get the opportunity to shine as Premiership players. Obviously, first moving to Irish when they're in the Championship, and obviously solidifying their spot now. So that's really great to see as well, and sort of reiterates just how far the Sale rugby family still extends. So that's everything from me. Alex, James, anything from you?
Nothing from me.
Only one thing from me, which is a shameless plug. Sorry to use the podcast to do this, but I've joined a tag rugby team and I've been told that I have to shout out the Instagram account. So if anyone's got nothing to do, tag Marry Avoid on Instagram, have a look. Sorry, I know that's shameless, but I've stuck it in at the end, so hopefully most people have turned off. But other than that, see you next week.